This is the Loaf Podcast. Welcome back to the bakery, everyone, where we break bread with the world's finest. Today, we're very lucky to be here with Liana Fink. She's an award-winning cartoonist. She often does bits in The New Yorker. She has her own Instagram page, and she's also made several successful comic novels. So, Liana, thanks for being here with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So we like to start with quite a chill question, and we get to know somebody quite well that way. Since we're the Loaf Podcast, we like to ask what your favorite bread is.
Oh, I have an answer prepared. I would say sourdough. I know that's what everyone says. I have a backup, which is I lived in Germany this year for a while, and there was something called, I think it's called like Weissbrot. I already forgot what it was called, but it was like made of like compressed seeds, and it was very good.
Yeah, it might be Weissbrot, because I'm half German, so I think that sounds familiar.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
It's good you came up with the other answer, because you're right. Almost every single guest we've ever had has said sourdough.
I wonder has this podcast existed before the pandemic?
No,
actually.
So I'm very curious if sourdough exploded during the pandemic.
Ooh.
I think maybe. You might be right. Sourdough baking, classic lockdown activity.
I was baking it for many years. I stopped when I went to Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, why didn't you stop?
Kill my starter. Because no one was feeding my starter, so I just let it go. And I know that starting again is really a commitment.
Okay.
Hey guys, I hope you're enjoying the episode. I just wanted to drop you in a word from our sponsor, Manscaped. You can use the discount code LOAF to get your discount, because even a lion needs to tame its mane.
Get the Performance Package 5.0 Ultra from Manscaped now. Stay fresh with no cuts, so that your baguette leaves no crumbs.
So we'll get straight into it. You are releasing a book very soon, I think, How to Baby, a No Advice Given Guide to Motherhood. Just for our listeners, we'll link it down below, the pre-order, but can you just tell us a little bit about the book and the idea behind it?
It's a book about, it's really a memoir about the first year of parenthood and also the before times being pregnant. But it's masquerading as an advice book. I read a ton of advice books when I was pregnant because I was very nervous, and I found them very delightful and very kind of easy to make fun of. And I just wanted to make fun of them. And the third thing it is a book of pictures. I've never made a book this way before. I started with pictures, like, when I was pregnant and when I had a newborn, I was keeping a diary in the form of little snippets, which is kind of the way I love to work, just making cartoons instead of a long linear narrative. So I started with those, and I made the narrative around them.
I mean, is the book different in what other ways is this book different? Because you've mentioned that kind of your Instagram is like a diary. So I kind of see that as like almost a work on its own. And then I read your book, Let There Be Light, and Ollie read, I think, I forgot the name of it, but he read
Passing
another one.
Human.
So yeah, Passing for
you.
Human. So I loved Let There Be Light, but I'm wondering how this book kind of, how does it reflect your phase in your own life?
Well, Let There Be Light and Passing for Human were both more traditional comics, where they were stories, and the words are divided into panels, and each panel usually has a picture, and the pictures and the words kind of go hand in hand to tell the story. And I could nerd out about that, but I will not. And then my Instagram, which I don't do very much anymore. It doesn't feel like the time for Instagram for a cartoonist somehow these days. I miss it a lot, but my Instagram was just kind of a diary on which I would post many pictures every day, just of how I was feeling and what was going on. And I tried to keep things kind of cryptic enough that it wasn't overshare-y, but I think I have a very odd view of what is overshare-y. So in many ways, I do overshare. And the drawings in How to Baby are like the drawings on my Instagram, where they were just like processing life for me and being kind of pointed and being funny and sometimes being mean and showing a lot of emotion. And in a way I was trying to, I'm always trying to unite the cartoonist side of myself with the storytelling side of myself. But I think I was trying in a slightly different way this time than I did with the comics.
Okay. I mean, there's so much to get into, and you said you don't want to nerd out, but that's exactly what we want you to do. We want you to nerd out about what makes kind of cartooning so special as a medium in itself. It's quite a unique medium, and I grew up reading comics myself a lot. I read a lot of Marvel and DC as well, but The Walking Dead I read when it, like, before the show as well, and Art Spiegelman's Mouse, which I think you've mm-hmm. taken some inspiration from. I was wondering in relation to maybe your own work, what makes cartooning and cartoons in general so unique?
I think they're unique in that they are kind of two mediums that are in two in one. They're words and pictures. I know, like, movies are also a mixture, and operas are a mixture, so, and musicals are a mixture, and songs are a mixture, but so it's not that unique, but it is. I have a bunch of things to say. One is that I always wanted to be a writer, but I just, like, drawing just is my language. I've always drawn, and I drew long before I wanted to be a writer, so I think by making comics, I'm trying to be honest. Another thing I want to say is that I draw a really big distinction between the short form things that are just single panel cartoons or just single drawings versus stories that you tell with pictures. And I do both, but I'm so fascinated by the very subtle differences between the two ways of working.
And when did you... You said you originally wanted to write, but you've been drawing a long time. When did you kind of make the transition into being like, okay, I think I'm going to be a cartoonist. Like, I want to take this somewhere, or were you just doing freelance work and it kind of spiraled?
Oh, no, it was before work, but I always drew. I think I should have been a cartoonist always, because I went to art school and I found out there that what I do isn't necessarily what happens in the art world. Like, I don't have big concepts and I don't make things very well or beautifully. And I don't like to fill a page and I don't like to make a sculpture and I don't like to stretch a canvas. I think I could have been an artist in a different era when maybe artists were making, making little paintings on vases or something. I would have liked to do that. But, I think cartooning is always what I wanted to do. Just like showing, like communicating through pictures, but the storytelling and like the wanting to kind of disappear into a story came along. I got obsessed with reading when I was about 12 or 13. So that's when I started writing. I started writing poetry and then I started writing stories, but it never quite, I never knew when I was finished. And with pictures, and I think that's because I was writing in words and it didn't come quite so naturally.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely relate. I was always someone that also as a young child kind of wrote poetry and even a bit of prose, and You wouldn't want to see my drawing, that's for sure. But I will say that there is something special about cartoons, and the work that you do is that it's very it's minimalistic, but I feel like that open space, that white space around it also allows kind of reader interpretation, and at the same time allows concepts to be distilled in quite unique ways.
Yeah, exactly. I think of myself as someone who draws ideas as opposed to who illustrates and makes a makes like each drawing a story or makes something pretty. Not that I really love when people do that. It's just not how my mind works. I also think like there are similarities between minimal drawing and poetry. I think there is a love of the white around the thing and a holiness of the thing isolated on a page.
It's interesting, like the comparison you draw with the fine art world, because knowing very little about it, but the kind of image is given is in high art, you know, certain people and there's this big establishment and you have to go through and do this internship at this museum and whatnot and get to know these people to have your painting sold. How does that reflect in like the cartoonist world? You're at the New Yorker now, but what's the like little ecosystem of cartoonists like compared to what like people perceive artists usually as?
I agree with you about the art world, although I'm so far outside of it now, but that it kind of freaked me out in art college. It felt like a king's court kind of, where there's like big money and then all these people surrounding the big money. And I don't know, I guess it's nice to have big money funding big projects and that's how it works. But it freaked me out a little bit. It just felt so official. The art, the cartooning world, to me, is very tied to the publishing world. And I guess it isn't to everyone, but I work for a mainstream publisher, for Random House. I'm published by a mainstream publisher. And I work with the New Yorker magazine. So I'm working very much with editors who are used to working with writers and for, you know, in a ecosystem that works with writers. And I really love the publishing world, and it's been interesting to watch things change in the publishing world. And, you know, I feel like part of the team in a certain way, worrying with everyone.
Yeah. I think it's quite a unique world as well. I was looking through the documentary, very semi-serious.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. It's cool. It gives quite like this unique insight. And I was also wondering kind of how much opportunity is there in this world? Like, how easy is it to get scouted? And what's that culture like? Because I feel like many people are pretty far removed as well from cartooning. It almost feels like this far away art form.
So the movie Very Semi-Serious was a documentary that was directed by Leah Walchuk and Davina Pardo. And it's amazing. I recommend it. I hope people can still find it. Used to be on HBO.
It's on Prime. It's on Prime. So it's definitely still available.
It's on Prime. Okay. That's amazing. So yeah, it like tracked a whole bunch of, it centered around the New Yorker editor at the time, Bob Menkoff, who really is kind of like a Shakespearean character. And it also tracked a bunch of cartoonists. And I was kind of the young upstart cartoonist who was just trying to get into the magazine. And I did get in, and it was partly because of the documentary that I got in. I think it made a really good story. And Bob has a real eye for story and performance. So I was very lucky, and I got really close to the documentary crew, and it was a wonderful experience. But the movie like frames this world as kind of a kooky, like small, heartbreaking world where these cartoonists are all competing for spaces, like very few spaces in this one magazine. And it is like that. And it used to be a much larger world because there used to be a lot more magazines and there used to be a lot more cartoons in the magazines. So people in the old days, people would start with the New Yorker that paid the best, and then they would make their way to the offices of all the different magazines that also took cartoons. And that was how gag cartoonists made a living. Now there's just the New Yorker, and it's different. And also like all the people in that documentary, it was this whole crew of older men who were wonderful, and a bunch of them have died since then. And it's changing. I don't know anyone who only makes New Yorker cartoons. Like, it's a side gig for everyone. And we also do things like freelance design, or we have a job, or, you know, things like that. And I don't know what the future holds.
It's a good foray into, I think on the side, something like that is really cool to be able to do alongside your books, alongside Instagram, because for me, at least what I know about the New Yorker and what I've read, it really is top of the range. And I'm not sure what the perception is within the cartoonist world, but I see at least the New Yorker as kind of the best of the best.
Yeah, it is. Although there's nothing else. So it's not like ballet or something where it's this huge machine with like a huge hierarchy. And if you've made it, you've just made it. It's more like a small anthill. And if you made it, then you get to keep working
Is it because you mentioned how, well, there were lots of people who've died as well. Have things changed there? Because I know that I read that this feeling that it's still quite male dominated. I was wondering how you feel about that, because I know that there's some people you look up to. I read the Julia Wirtz, Lord Birthday, Ross Chast. Are things changing in terms of the male female kind of dynamics?
Oh man, no, things are really changing things have changed at the New Yorker, I think, because of the documentary. When I started, I felt like even being everyone there was like an 80-year-old or 85-year-old Jewish male cartoonist. And even being a, 26-year-old Jewish female cartoonist made me feel extremely different. It feels much more expansive now, partly because the old cartoonists have all died, partly because a lot of new people have come in, and there's a new editor who's a younger woman also.
Oh, cool. Who's the editor?
Oh, her name is Emma Allen. She is amazing.
How do you think you managed to mark yourself out at the beginning with the New Yorker in like a room of old white men? Do you think there was like a big style difference between you and the other cartoonists or?
Well, no, I tried very hard to draw like the other cartoonists. I think the older men had learned to draw at a time when it was much more technical, and they used like ink wash and things like that. And even the younger cartoonists who were already in, most of whom were a bit older than me, also drew kind of technically, like technical illustration. And I was kind of fresh. Well, I wasn't fresh out of art school, but I had still to throw off the feelings from art school that it was good to use good art supplies. And so I tried. My drawings were really not very good. They were very stiff. And I know this is controversial, but I think of myself as someone who is very good at drawing, very fluent at drawing. I know it's not everyone's idea of what's good at drawing, but it just feels like there's a direct line from my brain to my hand. And that's my opinion, but I had to kind of cut that off and pretend to draw in a different way. And I did that partly because I have very low self-esteem and I had no idea how I was supposed to draw when I was trying to do it officially. And so in a way I had to kind of impersonate myself in order to get the job that I thought I was actually my ideal job that I should have. And also because I was afraid my cartoons wouldn't be taken seriously if I drew the way I doodle. But after I started selling cartoons, I started shedding the pretense. And even my first book, I drew like not really in my own style. I had to invent my own style. I had to like really think it out. Like how should I draw? How do I draw?
Yeah, I think you kind of like implicitly mentioned it, but people have a sort of thing about cartooning where it's like the idea is that it's supposed to be simple. And so you're like, it might not be everyone's idea, but I think actually your ability to communicate the thing in the most simple way is actually a really difficult thing. And I think if most people tried to pare back and get the emotion just right with only like one line, I think there's actually quite a lot there. But yeah.
Yeah. My trick is that I draw very tiny. I don't know if that would help everyone, but it might help some people.
Mm. And another thing you said about being like a cartoonist that helped you as you got into it was your ability to like step back and see from like an outside lens, and then you create a distance and that's why you're able to cartoon. What sort of things do you think you pick up on that most people otherwise wouldn't, maybe, that you get with that distance?
I've always felt like an outsider. I think I have like I'm slightly differently wired than average, and social things have always been really hard for me. Like, I don't think I spoke above a whisper until my 20s or made eye contact. But I've always been a watcher of people because I want to learn how to be a person. So I think that's where my subject matter comes from.
It's interesting in terms of kind of the originality in cartoons is, or let's talk about New Yorker cartoons, just to simplify things. The originality there, I think, is really interesting because it's original and it needs to be really clever, but it also needs to be something that's really recognizable. So the kind of thing which somebody says, oh, why didn't I think of that? So something that almost feels within the everyone's kind of conscience wants to come out to the forefront, but only the cartoonist can really word that in the right way. I don't know who it was who spoke about it. It was an interview related to Very Semi-Serious. It might have been the director of that documentary. They said there was a New Yorker competition and there were two chickens embracing or something along those lines. And one of them said, and you had to come up with a caption for it. And she or he, the director, put in their submission, which was something like, oh, sorry, I only date organic. Something like that. And they found out afterwards that there had been hundreds of submissions with almost the exact same wording. So I was wondering, for a cartoonist, when you're drawing a cartoon and a caption, writing a caption for that, when do you kind of notice, yep, this is it. This is clever. This is different.
Yeah, I think you're right. You need to strike a balance between surprising and like something people immediately understand and relate to. And I think having a caption that hundreds of people have also submitted probably means it's a great caption. Although you can't publish a cartoon after someone else has already published the same cartoon, that would be not original enough. I think of cartooning a bit like joke writing. So like when Jerry Seinfeld talks about what it's like to write a joke, like that's very, very similar to writing a cartoon. Part of how I learned the technique of writing cartoons was reading a book by Bob Mankoff, the former New Yorker editor, called The Naked Cartoonist. And he really walks you through it and it's illuminating. It really is. It's like a practice. It's a narrow art form with rules. It's a 1-2 punch. There's a setup and a punchline. You're supposed to see, the reader should see the setup before they see the punchline, whatever that means.
Ooh, yeah, it's almost like this mix between technical but also feelings based. And it's interesting that you mention Jerry Seinfeld. I'm a huge fan of him and his self-titled sitcom. I think what makes him so special, yeah, he's amazing. But I think what makes him so special is his ability to take really ordinary things and look at them from a very perceptive angle, which I feel you do in your cartoons as well. Things like dating or day-to-day life on the public transport. What do you think about that? What makes you kind of so able to bring out that perception?
I think I suffer a lot on public transport and in dating in a way that I think other people are able to ignore. I think I'm just a bad person. I'm not an evil person. I'm bad at being a person. So I just, if someone's sitting a little too close to me, as one must on a bus, I just like really seize up and it's horrifying in a way like that someone else might feel a little horrified, but maybe not even register that they're feeling horrified. So it's kind of impossible for me to not need to process all the minutia because they're excruciating. And similarly with dating, it gets harder when you are married because you don't want to write about the person you're married to because you can't escape them after. So my work has gotten a bit less personal.
Yeah. Talking about less personal stuff, how do you think cartoons can help? Because that was actually my first exposure to cartoons, as in like my dad used to get an edition of The Economist. I don't know if you know it. But it would always be some political cartoon on the front of Donald Trump doing something stupid, something like that. But what do you think is the place of cartoons for like political discussions? Just to like show something that's obviously wrong or?
I think, oh God, that's such a good question. Because cartoons are so good at they're kind of propaganda, which I don't say is necessarily a bad thing, but they like point out something that's odd and they just magnify it so that other people, so that everyone can see how odd it is. Why are they so good at that? In a way, like a joke, because they're so concise. I think. I don't know if it has to do with that they're visual.
I think people just also like looking at Trump looking ridiculous or whatever is probably at least a part of it. Like just some kind of funny thing.
I mean, you don't need a cartoon for that. Am I allowed to say this? I feel like once he becomes dictator, I will be punished. No, not by you, but I feel like they will scour the internet for people to punish.
Very Orwellian.
Well, watch out.
I'm starting to worry about that.
Yeah, no, I was gonna say I saw somewhere that you said like propaganda and cartooning and political cartooning, you might not be able to see the difference between them.
No, maybe not. I'm curious. Like there was a person on Terry Gross last week who studied propaganda, and I think I zoned out during the interview, and I've been meaning to go back and listen again because I'm so interested in like where the line is between propaganda and art. And I understand where the line is much better with a very involved, diffuse form of art, like a novel where it's so multifaceted, but a cartoon is not multifaceted. So yeah, where is the difference?
Well, I guess it's just maybe to do with like, I don't know, the severity of what you're talking about. If it's about a loved one annoying you, it's probably not propaganda. I mean, I don't know what that would be propaganda for.
I think it is propaganda. It's saying, like, in my cartoons, I'm just, like, I know it comes off as very narcissistic and saying that I'm always the right person and everyone else I make a cartoon about is wrong. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if I say, but, that just digs my hole even deeper. But, yeah, I'm just trying to justify myself all the time. And in some ways it is propaganda. I'm so curious about people who could just admit that they're wrong. Because to me, such a big part of me thinks of myself as like a space alien or monster that like I'm justifying myself just to prove that I have a right to exist in a human body. Mm. Mm. The bar is so low.
I guess that's kind of the theme, passing for human.
Totally.
Trying to be normal and feel like you fit in amongst groups where you feel like you don't, which I think the big appeal of the book is obviously that that's actually a universal human experience, is
it
some
is.
Level of adhesion to the group, which gives you the belonging, but then you're distanced from it at the same time. And in passing for human, the place your protagonist, which is you, I guess, speaks to their shadow. And I came into that with, I don't know if you know Carl Jung's shadow from psychology or no. Mm-hmm. How similar is it to that concept? What's the idea behind the shadow specifically as it is like in your book?
When I made that book, I just could not put the shadow into words, which I think was so maddening for my editors because it really was kind of approaching something clear but not attaining that, and I just couldn't, I was too close to it. I did have Carl Jung's shadow in mind, although I hadn't read a ton of him, although I like him. There was also a book by Haruki Murakami, I'm showing my age, that was called Hard-Boiled Wonderland and the End of the World that had shadow characters, and I really cribbed the shadow from that book a little bit. I love those characters. But for me, yeah, the shadow, like the best way I can explain it, and I think there's a better way that's more cohesive, but I say that the shadow is two things. Like in the case of my mom, this book tells the story of my mom and also the story of me. And the premise of the book is that girls lose their shadow, like girls grow up and every girl is born with a shadow, and the shadow is kind of her soul and it kind of keeps her being herself. And as a girl grows up, she loses her shadow because she's forced to conform to society. So I tell the story of my mom who either isn't neurodivergent or hides it very well. And she's just kind of the control story of just like a girl, a very well adapted girl who loses her shadow because of sexism, and she's kind of forced to marry earlier than she'd like to, and forced to not have a career, and that's how she loses her shadow. And then she kind of, when she loses her shadow, she strikes a bargain with the shadow and insists that if she has a daughter, that her daughter not lose her shadow. But then when I come along, my shadow is so weird. And so my shadow represents my soul, but my soul also is kind of neurodivergent and odd and kind of a burden to me and keeps me from fitting into society. And so I choose to lose my shadow in the book.
I read Let There Be Light, and I also noticed this kind of separation between body and in Let There Be Light, it's more of the spirit that kind of goes off and goes on its own adventures, either in a dream or speaks to God and so on. And I'm wondering, what do you think the relation is? What do you think about the human body? Do you feel like the something outside the body in a more metaphysical sense? Do you see it more spiritually? Because I feel like lots of what you draw is also very amorphous. So how do you bring out this kind of distinction between body and mind through your cartoons?
That's an incredible question. I've never been asked that before, and I have thought about it a lot. Let me answer the amorphous part first. That was intentional. When I was kind of inventing a style for myself in my late 20s, I noticed that the cartoonists who strike me as most honest, and in this case, I was thinking of Roz Chast and Gabrielle Bell, their characters look a bit different in every frame, and the facial expressions are the really pointed part of a picture, but the characters kind of shift, and I realized that's how I feel, like as a woman with a fluctuating weight, and like clearly I can't control my hair. This isn't on purpose. I tried so hard to make it go down for this interview and it wouldn't. But like I have no idea what I look like at any given moment. I wouldn't be surprised to look in the mirror and see like Franklin Roosevelt or something. Like I just have no idea. And I think that's kind of a heightened way of feeling like I'm not in control of my body that's based on growing up in the 90s and being expected to look like, what's her name? Like Rachel from Friends or something, like very thin with a very like specific kind of beauty, that no one actually has, but we were just taught that if you don't have that, you don't look like anything. And therefore we have no idea what we look like. So that's why I chose to make my character amorphous, and it totally worked. I'm very proud that I like troubleshot that. As for bodies and souls, yeah, I have a weird relationship with my body. I've never danced in my life. I don't feel very much in my body, although I really like to be outdoors and run and walk, and I'm active. It's just not like it's not a thing where I can tell that I have specific parts of my body and like can move like my toe or something. I think that's a little bit odd. And maybe I've never wondered if the divide between body and mind in my work comes from that, but I think it must. Like, I can explain that better, not feeling my body. It's not that I don't feel that I have a body. I'm just very, very self-conscious about being looked at. And that's why I couldn't make eye contact, like, cause you could tell that someone's looking at you when you make eye contact. And I think you react to that by just like pretending you don't have a body.
I guess that feeds in to kind of the shadow concept, cause it's kind of the part of you that you want to keep dear, and it's outside the body and it's dark and it doesn't look like anything. And yet it's the bit that really matters and that you want to get back at the end of the book. And that's what I think is like the valuable thing I took from it.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. That's exactly it. There is some Peter Pan in there too, by the way.
Yeah. I was going to mention that, but I think one thing that I found really interesting that you just mentioned is that kind of, if we don't look a certain way, then we're not anything at all. And it also reminds me of the Noah's Ark section in and Let There Be Light about, no, it wasn't the Noah's Ark section. It is the, I think it's the beginning in the Garden of Eden where Adam starts to name everything and then they start to exist because he's named them. I'm wondering what this relation is between creating things and putting them into existence and defining them through art. So the when you put something into existence through art, it kind of manifests itself in reality.
Yeah, it's interesting that God made the things, but they didn't start to exist until Adam named them. Because I feel like I make things and I don't name them. Let There Be Light is, it's an adaptation of the book of Genesis with the shy female God. That's my elevator pitch of it. And yeah, and there's the whole, like the crux of the book is that mankind, God is obsessed with men. And that is because I was trying to be very faithful to the original text and trying to explain why all the characters are male. And that was the only explanation I could come up with. And so God's obsessed with men, but men really misunderstand God and men think that God is an old man with a beard and God is too self-conscious and low self-confidence-y to put them right.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, they're kind of deeply personal explorations, I think, these books, which is why there's so much appeal, which is a similar thing to in how so this is for our listeners, in your other book, there's five chapter ones in Passing for Human. And it's almost like what I liked is you're kind of constantly reminded about how you're in a comic and you're experiencing it with them. And it's like rewriting the story of the life. And I think that's what's maybe cool about the cartooning is that like intimate aspect of you can draw somebody in much closer because you don't have all the flowery prosaic language or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's nice to feel freed from all the extra detail. It feels honest to me, at least to how I see things. Like I don't see much context. Maybe I'm very interested in like people, but I don't remember too much. Narrative never holds for me.
Yeah, I feel like there's this really metafictive aspect to your work, and I noticed that not only in these, you know, five chapter ones, but also in Let There Be Light, at least the way you use asterisks, you'll write something and then you'll comment on it yourself, almost as if calling out the narrative, but within the text itself. How important is that to your style?
I think I'm a tangential thinker, clearly, so asterisks are very nice for me. I think of comics also as a tangential art form where like it's these two mediums kind of working against each other, the pictures and the words. And then like the more the merrier, if there's a footnote also that I only put jokes in the footnotes though, in that book.
And to bring it to a more general discussion away from the books themselves, what do you think the average person can gain from cartooning themselves? And how do you think it helps people to understand themselves? Just the daily practice of like getting a cartoon out.
For me, there are many ways to use it, but I use cartooning as a way to kind of, well, I use it for two reasons. One, as a way of naming things that are bothering me and refusing to let myself suppress them, so that I could see them and move past them. And second, there's another way of drawing cartoons, which is just kind of to zone out and to like let your mind wander. And that's where my New Yorker cartoons, which are less autobiographical, come from. Usually I'll just take a day and just doodle. And that can be really healing and really fun.
Yeah, I think, remind me, do you use the gel pens that you use? You mentioned that it feels every tremble, right? So the pen reacts to every tremble in your hand. And I think that relates to the wider discussion of drawing, because even though I'm a terrible illustrator, maybe we can get up a picture here of one of the things I've drawn.
I'd love to see one.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you would, but
I would.
My point is, even though I'm not like quote unquote technically skilled, there's still this cathartic feeling of if, for example, I'm feeling emotional and I draw something, the fact that it's kind of being externalized, you know, this connection between mind and hand is quite a special thing. And I think comes out through drawing specifically that prose just cannot capture in the same way. Do you feel that maybe for a general audience, maybe our listeners who might see cartooning as lesser than, what do you have to say about that as cartooning as an art form?
Oh man, I don't have the thing where I see some art forms as more than and some as less than. So sure. I don't have that at all. So if someone does, that's okay. I think maybe it is less than. There's much less of a machine and much less of a history and much less of a community even. Like, so fewer people do it. But to me, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like I said, I'm not a very good drawer. I'm much more of a writer. So I mm-hmm. have good control of the language, but when it comes to drawing, not as much. Yeah. However, I do feel there is something about drawing that is outside of language.
Do you think in words? I'm fascinated with the idea that some people think in words and some don't. I don't know if it's true, but do you think that you do?
I definitely think in words more than pictures, to be honest. But it depends though. Like if I'm like on a day to day and I'm not concentrated on something, I'd say I think in words. But then if I'm thinking about a specific scenario, like I'm trying to imagine myself somewhere or something, then mm-hmm. it'll be images. But I don't know. What about you? Are you in images or a words first and person first?
I think I'm an ideas person, but I think that for me, ideas take the form of symbols, not like photographs, but also like, I don't know if I even think, you know, does anyone?
you probably do. It's a funny, that's like another level of meta, but did you know you were going to come in and do 5 chapter 1s, or is that like part of the process of creation?
Oh, it was definitely part of the process. It was the first, so it was my second book, but it was my first book that was kind of a story and not like my first book was a collection of letters that were written to a Yiddish advice column in the early 1900s. And I adapted them into comics and then I made a little narrative around them kind of to tie them together. But like I had an idea for the book before I made it, but the second book was like a story and I felt like it wanted to come out of me and like I didn't quite know how to tell it, partly because I'm not practiced in narrative, even though I care about it a lot, and partly because comics was pretty new to me. Like not cartooning wasn't as new to me, but comics with drawing the same characters over and over and making panels on a page, like the math of that was a lot to learn for me. And even the art supplies to use. So like, I just felt kind of hobbled in various ways. And I kept starting over, like I kept diving in. I didn't know how to organize myself to make it more manageable, like making the free writing and the making an outline. Like I never studied writing. I didn't know how to do any of that. So I just would plunge in and feel like totally enveloped by the story. And then like 20 pages in, it would totally fizzle and I wouldn't know what to do and I would stop. So after years of working on this book, I had 5 chapter 1s and I just put them all together.
Yeah. I think for anyone who's listening, right, who hasn't seen Liana's work, I mean, we'll try and we'll ask Nathan, he's our editor, by the way. He'll hopefully get some pictures up to kind of show the work that you do to for those watching on YouTube to get a feeling. A more like real experience of what you do, because it really is amazing. And we firstly want to say thank you for joining us today. I think cartooning is something that really flies under the radar and is maybe not given as much attention as it should be. Maybe some of the other journals and newspapers and media channels will bring it back a little bit. And in any case, we're glad to bring a spotlight on it. And we wanted to ask Liana, do you have any final thoughts here on the Loaf podcast that you would like to share?
No, I'm so touched that you had me on, and I loved your questions, and this was such a highlight of my week. Thank you.
Thank you. No worries. Well, yeah, we wanted to extend a huge thank you to you, Liana, for all those listening or watching on YouTube. You know, How to Baby is coming out very soon. We'll put all the information down below and, you know, pre-order that. But yeah, thanks so much, Liana. And thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Have a great rest of the vacation.
This is the Loaf Podcast. Out.
Hey, guys, it's Ollie here. I hope you enjoyed that episode with Liana Fink. Seems like you did since you got to the end. If you want to see another one just like it, you can click right here. Please don't forget to like and subscribe. And if there's any other guests you'd like to see in the future, drop a comment down below. See you guys in the next one.